Welcome to Film Yarns Podcast. This week we saw the 1984 film with the same name, 1984, based on the novel by George Orwell that you, I'm sure most listeners will be aware of. It is a British dystopian science fiction film written and directed by Michael Radford, starring John Hurt, Richard Burton, Susanna Hamilton, and Cyril Cusack. Film follows the life of Winston Smith, a low-ranking civil servant in a war-torn London ruled by Oceania and a totalitarian superstate. Winston Smith struggles to maintain his sanity and his grip on reality as the regime's overwhelming power and influence persecutes individualism and individual thinking on both a political and personal level. The film, which was Burton's last screen appearance, is dedicated to him. Nominated for a BAFTA award for Best Art Direction, won 2 Evening Standard British Film Awards, whatever that means. Yeah.
It was well received, I guess.
Yeah. I immediately noticed, yeah.
Do you want to kick us off?
Well, the first thought I had was, I was thinking about, it made me think a lot of how THX 1138 is basically just a way better version of this film. But obviously that would probably be heavily based on 1984. Mm. Thoughts? Disagree?
Yeah, that's true. I guess the other thing about THX is I do both. I agree and disagree. I guess the thing about THX is that it's all very smooth and nice. You know what I mean? The aesthetic differences.
Similar to the island.
You have the sort of quite beautiful. Yeah, exactly. You have quite a beautiful technocratic state, and then when you go outside of it, it's animal people, a state of regression. It's like here, you know, we're just dealing with people. I think THX has that. That science evolution attitude where it's like, oh, you know, the smartest people, they congregate in the technocratic state and everyone else just regresses. Whereas 1984 has, it's just misery everywhere, really.
Yeah, I guess that's the difference because we've talked about this before where there's a zone, you know, so in THX, it's THX when he climbs up the ladder, out to the outside world.
Yeah.
Or the island where they escape from, you know, the compound. Or Brazil, where they're underground for most of the film. Or not underground, but it just looks like they're underground again. They are inside for most of it, kind of, you know, a maze of buildings. Where I somehow, even though 1984 looks similar, you still feel like it's just the whole world is that kind of thing. Just that repeating in terms of the scenery and the
dystopia. Which I guess is
War-torn scenery, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's that's a representation that they want as well, right? Because their political maneuver is to create continuous wars, and the best way to remind people that there's war going on is that you have bad war-torn parts of your own city, I guess, as well, to remind you that you're fighting against something. I like that aspect, I think, of this film. I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but I thought the film wasn't that great, but there were some good spots.
It's such a good novel / story that you can get away with making a not so good, it stands on its own pretty well. You know, the acting was good. I just didn't think it was written or produced that well. A lot of people have that criticism, where it leaves the order of events is different and it leaves certain important parts out, especially with characterization and stuff, and where it's just they're suddenly in love and she's like, I want you or whatever. You know, it's kind of comes on a bit strong. And it's did I miss a scene?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think if this DVD or video or whatever would have had to be sold with a copy of the book as well, because I didn't really remember a lot of the book. I remember a lot of the sort of the key scenes or the overarching premises. So I can kind of make sense of the chestnut bar and all that sort of stuff, but it wasn't ever introduced in the film.
Yeah.
But I could string it together because I was I do remember that. These things came together.
Yeah. I think the main thing that is interesting with this is obviously you know, we can talk about the film in terms of production, but for the most part, I guess we just end up talking about the story. So we just end up talking about the story itself, not so much the book or the film, but just the actual story of the events, you know, because it's portrayed in the film and it's sort of, you know, it's, as you say, is sort of taken with the book as, you know, a double dose kind of thing. It's hard. No one would really ever, I mean, a lot of people would watch the film and not read the book, but
yeah,
we're just going to assume that, you know, people have read the book or will read the book.
Very popular.
But do you, so obviously like Orwell wrote it because he was worried about like Nazism and conformity, you know, from like communism. And it was like supposedly like an anti-communist, anti-Nazi book at the time he wrote it, like just after the Second World War. Yeah. When Britain looked like really dystopian, I guess, and you know, because it was literally war torn, and
yeah, it was.
And I think there were shortages of things like jam and coffee and chocolate and tea and stuff like that. I don't know, if only the government had these things or something, as portrayed in 1984. But I guess, you know, that was his fear, that it's, like, to him, the world seemed like it was on that course, even though it didn't, I mean, wasn't the war won, so to speak, at this point?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say whether or not any of those wars, like anyone ever was actually good or bad or like came out on top.
Yeah, I know, but how did World War II end?
The people who produced weaponry, certainly. How did the movie end?
No, how did World War II end?
Britain and stuff won, you know, technically.
Yeah, right.
Against the Axis powers.
Why would Orwell Britain still be worried up. In 1949 if the war ended in 1945? And his country,
I took it as, like you said before, I think there was like a concern, not for like communism, the theory, but for like Stalinist bureaucratic communism, where like, you know, it's essentially like a state-led embargo and nothing can go in and out, and everyone sort of has to live by these rules. And if they don't live by the, like the party dictates everything, I think that was what they were worried about, which is
right
to be concerned, which is concerning.
Yeah, but why was he, was there any shred of that in England? Like, I just don't understand the motivation for the worry, I guess.
I don't know. I guess, you know, the communist ideal is to, like, spread across the world, because, like, then it would be beautiful. You know, there'd be workers' revolutions everywhere. We would all be living happily. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, you know, even the name, like, Ingsoc or whatever it was, that's English socialism or something, right?
Right,
in the movie, or in the book as well. I guess it was that sort of... I think the term they use in the book is, or in the movie, was oligarchical collectivism.
Right.
Which, like, I guess there you kind of just see, like, the couple of heads of state just collect everything for themselves. And they also, like, they say what goes on, you know, like, extremely authoritarian.
Yeah.
Which kind of, to a certain degree, has happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I guess I would point out the flaw in his critique is that he points the blame at the, system of organization of government, when it just happens either way. So it happens in democracy, like in the Western world, as you see now with, like, you know, the technocracy, especially in America, but it also happens in like full-blown communist capitalist countries like China.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like,
and then it's just like a dick measuring contest, like, to be like, which one is more free? You can't really measure.
I guess back then there was a bit more of a legitimate position to argue against these sorts of things in terms of like what the future would be shaped like. But I mean, Britain is like, London is like one of the like most heavily surveilled cities in the world. So, yeah. I think the other thing is, like, when I was watching it, I was struck by the mechanism of controlling people was to keep like I guess like what Naomi Klein calls the shock doctrine, which is just like if we can keep on like if shocks can keep on occurring, politicians can keep on moving laws through and make change the rules and stuff every time. So something like having a continuous war is good for them because they can just be like, oh no, now we need to like. It's going to keep making money because the industry is just going to keep making like weapons and stuff like that. But it'll also be better because then like these oligarchical figures can gain more and more power, you know, and just keep like the rich can keep getting richer. And it's like, all right, we can really make these class differentials in them as well. Like they have the proletariats. They call them the proles, I think.
Yeah, the proles, yeah.
Yeah.
And
instead of like... In like an actual communist revolution, the proletariat would be the ones to, you know, take up the power and work together as a commune. But here you have this like really segregated group of people and they're like, well, we have to keep them down. They're kind of like, I can't remember how much they get into it, but it's like, oh, you know, they're less people, you know, like sub people.
Yeah. And also, I guess with the infinite war thing, it's kind of like, they have the fear dial that they can crank up as needed, like to, you know, to manipulate the population as required.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. And I think the other really interesting thing I thought when I was watching this movie, the other thing that I thought was interesting about this movie when watching it was how they tried to eliminate the orgasm. I don't know if you remember that.
They had the seminar. And they're like, Dr. Like, such and such has eliminated the orgasm. Yeah.
And I think the thing there is they have war and what do they call it? I guess like social execution as well. You know how there's scenes where everyone's kind of like getting into the town center to watch people get shot or hung.
Yeah.
That's really where the orgasm's going, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like you're up against all these people, you're touching all these people, you're screaming, you're shouting, and you're feeling things.
Yeah. So
like, I think that's really interesting that they've like.
The film does really well to kind of humiliate and point out that like radical ideology sort of thing, like when it's really contagious, especially, you know, in like a kind of communist state type of way, or in the, you know, the bad style where, you know, like they're all yelling at the screen, similar to like them enjoying a public execution. And it's like parodied, you know, that he's parodies their passion for whatever that, you know, they're yelling at the screen, all this stuff, and their hate is directed at this, like, you know, figure behind the screen, Big Brother. Just like, you know, any sort of, you know, like Hitler would basically do the same thing. You know, he would rally people's emotions and say, you know, the figure behind the screen is the Jew, and, you know, they're the ones creating all the war and all the problems in your life. Like, and then the film does well to kind of point out, like They Live does well, you know, using the glasses as sort of the metaphor there. 1984 does it well to show like how it spreads and how people kind of encourage each other, like, no, that's bad, double speak and blah, blah, blah. And then you just kind of like get, you know, molded into the status quo, I guess.
Yeah, I think that was sort of a funny, the double speak thing I totally forgot about was quite funny because they'd be like double good or plus good or something,
double
whenever they
would
like refer to something that's better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought like how funny that like sort of gamifies language, like we just think of like things in terms of levels and that's a good like, or grading as well, so that's an A or a B or whatever, rather than thinking of it in terms of anything else. Which sort of led me to think that brother dynamic, that there is sort of like an Oedipal relationship there, like the politicians or like the premiers are like a father mother figure watching these people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in that way, like whenever they act in terms of like gradation or like, you know, numerical equivalents, they can be like, yeah, this is the good number, I'm going to show mum or dad, or in this case Big Brother.
Yeah. And you have to credit Orwell for those terms, because people use, they are useful these days, like it's a useful reference, people use those in like, you know, in essays and videos to get their point across now, like you, like double speak, for example, you don't have to explain what that means. I mean, most people have read 1984, or they at least know what. And like, you see right wingers use it all the time to criticize like political correctness.
Yeah.
And like, to, you know, to criticize, you know, like anti-free speech sort of stuff. Like a...
Which is sometimes legitimate, sometimes illegitimate. There is some certainty I can get behind some.
It's just interesting just when like
absolute bullshit.
It's just interesting when a cultural artifact like a novel can come up with terms that then enter the the lexicon and can and have utility. That's
public discourse.
that's the opposite of 1984, where they're reducing the dictionary size. So like, he creates this piece of art, you know, the book, and you actually add to our expressivity of our language. So someone is, you know, better equipped to critique something.
I mean, like, there are some.
Sorry, the latency. My bad. You go.
Yeah, there is obviously some bad adaptations as well, right? I'm pretty sure QAnon is bigger than 1984 train now.
Yeah, see, it's an interesting thing because the book,
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Probably, no, because it's like, obviously, right or left wing, even radical, no one really hates the book. You know, it's liked by both. It's not divisive, but it's sort of, it's criticizing the same thing, which is, I would say, just like radical, contagious ideology.
Yeah, I guess, interpretation is everything.
It's just like both sides. We spoke about this last time, I think, as well. It's like both sides, you know, say you're radical right or left, you love the book because you see it as a critique of the other side either way. It's like, they're the ideological idiots.
In that case, you could actually say that it's a really bad piece of art. Yeah, like you could say that it didn't do a good job because it's too easily impressed on people, or like they can too easily impress themselves onto it. But you know,
So you could say the book like makes people either way believe that they're the ones fighting the good fight, even if they're not, because it's easier to like view the enemy as either your own government or the people in your country who are you just imagine them as kind of. You know, the people yelling at the screen in the book, and you're like, oh, you idiots, you can't see the truth that I can see.
There's a lot to say between like capital T truth and little truth, but it is interesting. I mean, the other thing I was thinking about in terms of like surveillance with Big Brother and stuff, because they have a lot of like the children are the like the snitches in that movie, or in the book as well. Like the kids are the ones that seem to be like, they're all like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and stuff like that, which I can only assume be an allusion to like Hitler Youth or something. It's sort of like the supervision is almost like a loving look, you know what I mean, as well? Like, you'll never be alone because they're always watching you, and that's quite a paranoiac sort of thing. But actually, like, it's quite narcissistic as well to think like, oh, everyone's watching me all the time. You know, it's like no one cares about you. Like, obviously, in this film, they totally, or in this book, they totally did. But it's still like we're trying to make you happier. Your discontent is turning you like you're going to be having a worse and worse and worse time. You might as well, just move on to what we want you to do. Like when he holds up the fingers and he's like, oh, is there five fingers there? And the guy just sees it in his mind. Like, that's what they want. They just want you to be happy. They just want you to be told and say yes to what you want.
it's such an interesting point.
He rats on his girlfriend as well, pretty quickly. Literally, right? Because he hates rats.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
But...
Go on.
I think when I was watching it, I was just thinking, it's like, I wonder how long I would last. Like, not that long.
No. I don't know. I don't want to have to get tortured. I don't want to live in a world where that could happen to me.
Yeah.
Luckily not in any place that Australia or America or Britain wants to, like, exploit. So I'm pretty free of that right now.
Yeah.
But who knows? The tides could change. I think another thing that was interesting is the dissolution of the nuclear family, right? Because that's quite a radical move. I think in terms of like, you know, the, I think that's a positive move though. You know, this film, this book seems to think of it as like a terrible thing. Don't get rid of the family. The family's a core thing, but I think really the family's a bad thing. I love my family. Don't get me wrong, but you have to adopt the parental neuroses, like parents, you know, the parent-child relationship is always kind of fucked up. Parents kill their children lots. They, like, sexually assault their kids. Like, it would be a lot freer if there was no
Yeah, but I don't think the family relationship is the reason for those problems. I think there's a different cause of those problems in, like, family relationships. You know, like, just the general, like, corruption of, you know, our morality, I guess, in society. Like, you know, oh, yeah, I know, like, it's a very Western thing for, like, kids to fucking hate their parents, like, while they're living with them and stuff. And, like, but I think that just more is a, you know, that's more of a result of, like, them not being in touch with each other very much. Like, with the parents being out of touch with what their kids are into and thinking that they're just, like, doing the wrong thing all the time and they're not living up to their expectations and the parents are at work most of the time, so they don't really bond with the kids and, like, they don't, you know, like, trip balls together or something to properly bond. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't see the nuclear family as a bad thing, even though it, you know, it can, it, I get your perspective when it can manifest in bad ways, particularly in, I mean, Western countries, but like tradition, and also like the other aspect of that is like tribalism is bad for the most part. So like, you know, families should be obviously accepting of other families.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like my position on the nuclear family is that it was like created by sort of like industrialists a couple hundred years ago.
I knew you were going to say
this. reproduce laborers, really.
No, but like if you watch like an old...
Well, that's why...
watch like an old Western movie where like the whole family, like including the grandparents, just lives in like, you know, a shanty, like just because that's the only option. It's not like it was like, it's not like they created it so they could work better. Like they just had to live that way because that was the only option.
Yeah, but movies aren't always factual. I understand what you're saying, but I think historically, if you look at like the pathologization of heterosexuality, like essentially like the efforts people went to like make homosexuality a mental illness and stuff like that is like good examples of how like the heterosexual monogamous family home was created and, you know, why it's always so problematic. But yeah,
I get your critique in that, like the kind of that ideal picture of that nuclear family was created and perpetuated in like 50s America, like happy family kind of thing. You know, I totally get that image.
Even further back, like in the like 19th century.
Oh yeah, which country?
Like I guess it would have to be like Britain, Germany. All sorts of places. Europe, I guess, as a area. Because, I mean, you know, you can feel free to disagree with me, but like Silvia Federici talks about the nuclear family, and this is when only men were really working, and this would be when they're working in factories as well. Like you have to have the woman at home, because the man is like, he needs he's to take out his frustrations on somebody because he's like dominated by the capitalist at work.
That is the most cynical perspective.
Oh yeah, I think it's totally true.
Decided that it was just the only way at the time. Like it's just how it happened. It's just how it panned out, and just as what the same think, as like families had to live together to survive and support each other. It wasn't like someone laid down the law.
I think they do. I think there are certainly like political powers out there that make decisions to say like, can we influence people this way or that way, and how would it benefit the people that we want to succeed? That's totally think that's how it works. I mean, yeah, there's probably some natural inclinations in there as well. I don't think it's all brainwashing or whatever, but there's certainly like ways that people can make it so that like. The implant idea is it's like this is good and this is bad. You'll have a lot easier time if you just follow the easy thing.
That's a good point in the film, just referring to like, say which number of fingers I'm holding up. Take the easy way, don't buck the status quo.
Yeah, but I think the important part about that as well is that like you can't just say it, you have to believe it. You know what I
Like
mean?
you have to literally,
Like, because
no, that it's such a
see,
good illustration of like true like false belief, like double think, so to speak, like where you are so like enmeshed in, the status quo or the cultural like ideals that you literally visualize and see things for the way that you are supposed to see them, rather than the actual supposedly objective way that they are. So like you could be influenced, like say you did live in 1984, you could be, you could have your thoughts, your patterns of thought so influenced by the external stimuli that are set out for you, that you could actually, without having being drug induced, you could be like, this place is great. Everything is great. Like, and not be able, because you can't think, because they're erasing like negative words from the language and stuff, that will stunt your ability to think on a negative track or critically evaluate and be like, how could this place be better? Because it kind of sucks. Because when you, and there's a lot of like philosophical texts about, I don't know if you could scientifically prove it, but there's a lot of texts about how language and vocabulary literally enable your ability to think, even though you don't think in words in your brain, they still like readily enable you to like critique and think.
Yeah, for sure. It's structured very much like a language. I think it'd be funny though, like it is an interesting thought to think like why, well, like take away bad from good, you're just going to come up with the thing that is not good. You're not going to have to say like if they take away bad, you're just going to be like, this isn't good, this is the thing that's the opposite of good. You could just say that, but I totally understand where it's coming from. I mean, like I'll do an interesting book by Verno. He
Sorry,
was
could
talking
you just
about
repeat
like
that? It just cut out.
Oh, I was reading an interesting book called On Negation, and Verno was talking about how like a soldier can look at an enemy combatant or a civilian of the other side even, and like see them crying or like starving or something, and think like that person should die. Like that's not a person. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the words getting in between it. Like, because like looking at a person, you're just like that's another person. You know? Like, but like if you're so convinced by, I don't know, whatever it might be, the nation, the spirit of the nation, the cultural
And
power.
they put a lot of like psychology and research into being able to train soldiers to literally think in those ways.
Yeah, exactly. And like also, I mean, anyone who wants to be a soldier probably has a little bit of that in them anyways.
A little bit of what? Want to kill, or a little bit of non-critical thought?
I think neither of those. I think national pride. I think
Yeah, a little bit to start,
it's
which will get
about
them to sign up, but then and then they build on that basically more and more by, just very softly propagandizing you into like having a rock solid belief that you wouldn't question later on.
and
You wouldn't, it's like, the
it could
Mitchell
make
and Webb
sense
thing
as
where it's
well.
like the "Are we the baddies" thing, when he's like in the like the Nazi parade, and like I fucking love that, like, because it just illustrates it so well. He's like, "We the baddies," and like, but anyone can say that at any time in any country, really. It's just like you should always question, because it's like, especially, when things get tense with like trade wars and stuff like that, and you just take it, and a few years later you've taken it so far, and then you're just like, wait, like we're making all these people suffer in this country just because we didn't want our people in our country to suffer at all. It's like, are we the baddies?
Hello, America.
Yeah, do you see Apple is getting a lot of shit because of that factory thing?
Well, they should. Apple fucking sucks, man. People treat Steve Jobs as if he were some sort of like transcendent god.
Yeah, well, like, because they're getting hit to shit because, you know, they jump so hard on the virtue bandwagon, like, around, like, Black Lives Matter and stuff. Like, we care about Black Lives Matter. And then, like, but Indian lives, you know, not black enough for them, I guess. Because, like, there was, like, basically, these people were getting paid, like, $6 a month in the factory that they directly hired to make parts for phones or something. Yeah. And so they, like, fucking trashed the factory. I haven't watched too much news on it, but it's just, like, very typical where it's, like, you know, they'll sell whatever image they want.
There's a huge workers' uprising in India right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I think the companies like Apple and stuff, like, they know what they're doing because they're selling to, like an upper-class liberal who thinks, like, you know, I don't do anything bad, so I'm not a bad person, you know what I mean? Like, as long as you don't think, you know, you're making all the smart decisions, you're voting for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, like, this is good, I'm a good person, I'm making a change in the world, and that's it, you know? Like,
yeah.
But, you know, totally know who they're pandering to, you know what I mean? They don't give a shit about people who are, like, working in factories that make, like, no money, you know? Like, tons and tons of, like, Sri Lankan and Indian workers get killed in factories. Like, some of the factories don't even have, like, exits or anything, and so people just get, like, stuck and die in the, yeah, it's fucked up. But yep. I think this is an interesting coincidence that you brought up Apple as well, because Apple used the beginning of the 1984 movie for one of their first computers.
Good link. Yeah. Good link. And I was just watching.
It's quite a good ad as well, but it's kind of shocking.
It's a classic ad. It's funny because I was just watching a review of the 1984 film before we started by Siskel and Ebert, Roger Ebert. I think I've referenced a couple of his reviews because he's like a pretty famous film reviewer. It's Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert.
Roger Ebert is a bad boy. RIP to a god.
Yeah, well, they were debating the film, and at the end of the video, Ebert was saying, you know, he likes the film, it's good, but Siskel is like, you know that commercial from Apple that came out in 1984? He's like, that was the whole film summarized in that commercial. I didn't need to see the film. And I was just like, damn, that's a good take.
I think yes and no, you know, like the ad was like total, like, get with us, you know, we're like, we're breaking out of the mold, we're Apple, we've got, you know,
and it was that
new thing, like
it was that typical, like, emancipatory internet sort of culture from the 60s and 70s where it was like, yeah, like, you know, break the trend, like fix the world using the internet, like just get an Apple computer and like then you can save the world.
The electronic front or whatever it was.
Yeah.
I remember there was like all those, yeah, that was a big thing. Like they really thought, yeah, emancipation through the internet, and then you sort of see like,
yeah, did I give you that book in the, I think I was going to give you the
later,
book
15 years later, you have
the green one.
I don't know what it was.
Surveillance
maybe,
Valley,
yeah, possibly. No, but I'm going to Google that right now. I'll probably just download it or something.
It's one of my favorite books, but, man. It's great.
It's interesting to see that, like, did you say Surveillance Valley?
Yeah. By,
this one's cool.
The Russian guy, yeah.
Someone.
I'll send you a link later.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, it's 10, 15 years down the track when you, huh?
Oh, I just said I'll send you a link for it later.
Anyway, 10, 15 years down the track, you sort of have... thank you. 10, 15 years down the track, you sort of have like the emergence of cyberpunk, and you have all these sort of like teens and like early, mid-20s hacking into these people who run the electronic frontier and showing just how much they're just like earn stocks and advertising and all this sort of stuff and showing like these people who they are, which is just like,
yeah, that's absolute, what it, that's like, exactly what this book is about.
Advertisers.
Yeah, that's exactly what this book is about, man. Mm. It's about like the kind of the bullshit. It's just like the Apple thing, like using, you know, virtue signaling sort of marketing tactics. And it's the same as like all, you know, these, the early tech companies were like, you know, they would sell people on the idea of like emancipation from capitalism and like freedom. I mean, they would gain freedom by using these like, you know, alternative tech devices. And basically all these companies were funded by, you know, the US government on the underside. And it's so like many
Department
of them.
Of Defense or something.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. Well, that's how the internet was born. Like, because the, yeah. They needed a way to communicate better. Mm. In the Vietnam War, they kept getting ambushed by like guerrilla fighters, and they needed like a better form of like sharing information around on like some sort of network server thing. Mm. So I think it was called the ARPANET at first, and then they developed it from there. It's so interesting. And then you had all the like the hippies, the like acid taking hippies and stuff in the 70s being like, yeah, like tech hackers and stuff. But then they all just got like huge government jobs and stuff.
Yeah, that's I still hate hippies to this day, because the hippie like sort of revolution was to make like everything cultural political, and so like, they kind of lost all these real political fights, because like in the domain of actual politics, Republicans and conservatives were winning across the board.
Yeah.
Because like hippies and stuff were just like, no, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to opt out of politics in general. And so like Ronald Reagan or somebody comes in and is just like, fine, whatever, fuck it. Like, let's go cause some wars.
Yeah.
And
you see that repeated.
Yeah, I think like
you see that
thing,
like
and,
that whole
you know,
thing
I don't
repeated
fault
today.
People for this. Mm.
Sorry, go on.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I don't fault people for thinking. I don't fault people for thinking. But, like, it doesn't shock me that people would want to escape the world into the internet, you know what I mean? Like, I think the problem is that like the internet isn't a different world. You're just in the regular world and you just like forget about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so instead of having a better life on the internet, it's just that you turn into a consumer with all these other consumers, and they're your logic is just like you're a buyer or a seller. You don't become a person anymore. You're a pure transaction between other pieces of information. And perhaps that was utopian at the time, but that seems like such a bastardization of any form of utopia I can think of. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. Well,
and all the while, all the people who...
Yeah. It's like the doomer mentality now. If, you know, someone who plays like video games all day and they're like, yeah, the world, like, fuck the world. The world fucked me over. So, like, I live in this virtual world now. It's just like... But they see themselves as... Like that is as some sort of emancipation, like just because it's, you know, an escape for most of the hours of their day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in a sense, opting out of life is emancipatory. But you're not really helping anybody. You're not helping yourself.
But you can't fully opt out. So you lose. You lose because, if you could actually opt out and, like, not have to come back to support yourself in the virtual world, then maybe... You know, that's a fair argument, but you can't. So it's not a fair argument, at least at this stage.
And also, why would you want to leave people and everything else as it is now? Like, surely it would be better to help move things forward. Like, wouldn't you be... I understand
well,
that there's
I guess,
so many reasons to
yeah,
not...
Yeah, I would say that most people, like, it's not really a choice to opt out. It's more like... They have had a real shit time in the real world, and it's kind of like, what's my other option? So, you know, I felt like that. Like, I'm sure you have as well. Like, so I guess, it's a tricky one because people are just like so beaten down. And it's like, well, fine, I'll just fuck off to like, you know, Call of Duty, where like at least I can, you know, do something and feel good about myself.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't, I wouldn't criticize people for wanting to do that. It's a pretty shitty world, you know, like there's like economic crisis, and then an environmental crisis, and that like it seems like no one has any power to do anything but buy, and like even that hasn't become like a source of enjoyment anymore because you have to have five fucking jobs to buy like dinner. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't begrudge anyone opting out, but I think if people really need to start looking at why, like, what's happening here, and start bringing those people back into the fold. You know what I mean? Like, if you feel really alienated and you feel like you're really outside of everything, like, those are the kind of people you should be contacting first and bring them back.
Yeah. Yeah. I do all of my, I do all of my consulting over the, chat on PS4 games. I do try to be a nice guy because, like, generally, like, most of the people there, not most of the people, but you do meet a lot of people who, like, aren't doing as well as you are. So it's, you know, it's good to just, like, be friendly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Like, I think, you know, don't be a dick. That's good. That's a good rule, probably.
Yeah, I know. The one commandment.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's funny that the like it's PlayStation or like I guess Xbox or PC or whatever that you like find people on. Because I've been playing Cyberpunk.
Yeah. How's
and,
that?
Like, I mean, like it's got some bad press. It deserves that bad press. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun as well.
I'm sure they'll sort it out. It's a bit of a No Man's Sky situation. Yeah.
I think so. I think that's what people are saying, but. I saw someone tweet something that I thought was quite funny, and I was like, I might be paraphrasing it wrong, but, you know, all paraphrasing is kind of shambles. It's like, games that claim to be cyberpunk, but only aesthetically, should be renamed Neon Liberal. And I think that's sort of true of all the stuff right now, because, like, it is just an aesthetic. Like, there's nothing punk, really, about the game. Like, you can get missions where you help the police, right? Fuck the police. what?
So can you do anything punk? Like, you know, yeah. So I was, that's right. Because you would imagine like cyberpunk, it's like, you know, you're kind of on a quest to like, you know, you're kind of some like anti-establishment hacker or something where you just like, you know, you got to be like a bit of a vigilante and meet up with people and like try and take the system down from the inside.
You kind of are, like, you've got, through a sort of a weird set of events, you've got, like, Keanu Reeves in your head, who is a rock star and terrorist, which is funny, I think, but I kind of like it as well. Like, I think they should have leaned more into the cheesiness of it. But, yeah, no, I think it might end up being some, like, massive thing, but I think that, like, it looks cool.
I think it'll get there,
but
for sure.
I mean, it definitely shows a lack of depth in terms of what they consider something to be revolutionary or like politically radical, but maybe they just can't make video games like that. Maybe that's not how video games are made.
Certainly not a big budget one.
Yeah. So maybe it's that, but like, you know, it is interesting.
It's similar to, I think it's similar to like, the Call of Duty games, which are just in effect, like, epic propaganda a lot of the time for like you know, like anti-communist propaganda, like a lot of, like when they used to have a campaign mode and it's just like, yeah, fuck the Russians up, like fuck the Nazis or whatever.
And then when you are the Russians or the Nazis, you like do what the Nazis or the Russians do and you're like, oh yeah, this is fun, like
I prefer the Halo take where you become the alien,
the avatar. That was cool. And it turns out that like their people have just been like brainwashed by a huge like religious fanaticism.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right? It had such a cool story to it. It had such good depth to it. And it's like because you got to face up to your bosses. You know, you walk in and like, and then the big bosses are there, and just like, I don't know, it's really immersive. It's like, oh wow, like I'm answering to fucking these guys now.
It was funny that they. It was like a samurai culture. So they obviously were just like, these people are Japanese. Which, yeah, it was interesting in the sense that they succumbed to religious fanaticism, considering, you know, the Pacific battle. Anyway, what I wanted to lead into with games, like, things that don't really, like, for meaning. And
sorry, just cut out a little bit. Could you just repeat that?
What I wanted to make the link was between the game and the movie was that things detached from any meaning just become like you can't figure out what their reason for being is, and you see that in the movie with the paperweights and stuff. That what's the main guy's name?
Winston.
Winston, he has all these things, and he's like, oh, what is it? Like, people ask him, like, what is this thing? He's like, I don't know, it's just from the past. Or like, he knows like a rhyme, or he sees a painting, and he's like, wow, what is that painting on? And it's like, oh, nobody knows, it's just from the past. And that's kind of true of now. Like, there's just heaps of shit that's just like, it keeps getting recycled, and it's like, oh, why is this a thing? And it's just like, oh, it was from the 80s, you know? Like,
yeah.
And that's it. That's as far as the distinction goes. Like, no one says, actually, plenty of people have said, like, why can't we have new thing? But apparently, selling the past back into the future is wildly productive.
Yeah, I guess that's just because of like how strong of an emotion nostalgia is for people, and those people tend to have money because they're older. So like, it's such a effective marketing tactic, because you can grab hold of someone's nostalgia who's likely to be, you know, in their 40s or 50s, so is more likely to be, you know, at least have more disposable income than, say, someone in their 20s or 30s.
I think it's kids. It's kids that are buying this, like, yeah, no, stuff.
That's actually a good point. Yeah, they're somehow able to market, like, 8-bit video games to, like, 12-year-old kids.
Yeah, but, and the thing about it is that, like, they look really beautiful because they have 2028 big graphics.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I love them.
They're like the potential for, yeah, oh, it's beautiful. But the potential for the games to be any good is so drastically impaired compared to the 80s 8-bit games.
Right.
Some of the 80s 8-bit games are kind of crazy and interesting, you know, whereas these ones come out and it's sort of just like,
I don't know, man. It's a big generalization, because like, some are good and some are bad today. It's just like pop music has always been good and bad, like, since its inception. Like Broforce, for example, that's pretty awesome, as is like Hyperlight Drifter and even like Stardew Valley or some shit. Like, they're all pretty awesome games in all their, you know, pixelated glory. And yeah, they have that kind of, you know, when it's the new pixelated look. Same with movies like Wreck-It Ralph, where it's kind of like, it's like that modern 3D animation where, and you can, it just has a very modern feel to it, and it's very aesthetically pleasing to watch.
I liked Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh man, I love it. One of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool, but and then
same with the Lego movie
one where they go into the internet, which is always a. I've never seen the Lego movie.
What?
But I like anything where they go, where people go into the internet.
Man, watch the Lego movie.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, it's great. It's one of my
favorite
movies.
It's just cameos by all sorts of characters, but Lego-wise, like your man and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, there is a Batman, and it's not too much cameos. It does have Will Ferrell in it. I mean, he's not cameoing, but like, he kind of always is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But I think with the Lego movie, it sort of makes me feel the same way. What was that movie? Ready Player One?
Yes.
Like,
yeah, similar where, like, for sure.
The whole movie doesn't really matter. It's just a way for Steven Spielberg to be like jacking off onto all these things that he's like somehow helped create.
That was
like,
the main criticism. I did that. It was like pop culture overload. Like, it was just like, ooh, another reference. Throughout the whole
exactly,
movie.
Exactly, yeah. Like, but that being said, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, the Akira bike is racing the DeLorean from Back to the Future. Mechagodzilla is fighting the Iron Giant, is fighting a Gundam. You just have all these really weird cultural... Or Goro from Mortal Kombat has an alien, which... And I was just like, what the fuck is happening?
It is a bit heavy-handed.
It's
as if someone like gave him the idea, like, oh, have you ever met like Comic-Con nerds? Because like, they go crazy for like cosplay and like just an overdose of mashups of characters. Like, but then he's just like, okay, I'll do that. And then
I think you're right. I think I think you hit the nail on the head with the first thing you said, which is Steven Spielberg has recreated in CGI a Comic-Con.
Yeah, but still, I enjoyed that movie.
Because the story of the film is stupid. The story of the film is like, this guy meets this girl. The girl is like, I'm actually kind of gross in real life. He meets her. She is an absolutely normal person with like a little red mark on her face. And then it's like, oh, the corporation that's made us all very poor is going to own the internet where we all live, except if we get like,
How is that not a realistic film?
Because it's already fucking happened. And also,
yeah, but apart from that, we don't have the technology yet. It is happening. We're not there yet.
But like, why would we all have to be deferential to this nerd who made the internet? Fuck that shit. Like, he's just like, oh, can you find the keys? I'm just like this impotent cuck. Like, I never got what I really wanted. This girl told me how I thought she would.
Yeah, but I mean, that is a fair portrayal of like these tech oligarchs, like who were just bullied too much at school, and then they just have a complex, they have no social skills, they're not in touch with their fellow human being, and they don't really have a good understanding of right or wrong, and so they just, but they have all this power handed to them because they are so wealthy and powerful, when, you know, for example, Zuck or Musk or Bezos or, you know, the list goes on, really. Mm. Like down the kind of riches. Mm. Line, but they do share a lot of traits, you know, extremely intelligent, mm. probably didn't have a great time at school, but did well after school. And, you know, they're not that well-rounded human beings, I guess. Not saying, you know, no one's perfect. I'm not perfect, but I feel like I just wouldn't be such a fucking cunt if I had so much money. Who knows, though? Can't comment. Don't have their money, so don't know how it corrupts the mind.
Maybe you'd be more of a cunt. Who knows?
Oh, that would be hard, but yeah, we can try.
Pack this up, just because I gotta go.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely aware of that. I think we pretty much covered it pretty well, and I like that we went for the ultimate clickbait slam dunk of combining Cyberpunk 2077 with 1984.
Because they, you know, both of them failed in whatever criticism they were really trying to do.
Yeah, other than having like a 4-digit year number in their title, they do share some similarities in that they portray different eras of dystopia, I guess. Mm. Or try to, anyway. I mean, then, yeah, this is like at the core of our whole kind of podcasts, really.
Yeah,
like 1984, the novel is like such a foundational text in sci-fi, and like so many of the movies that we've seen would take inspiration from it in some way. The book, I mean, not the movie, but
yeah, and like to be fair to the movie, probably would I enjoyed watching it. Like I think kind of boring, and the film itself was kind of all over the place continuity wise, but I liked the settings. I liked all the TV screens everywhere. I liked
it was a bit cringe all the, like, office at times.
Where it was just like, yeah. Hmm. But I was happy to watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking through Radford's list. I haven't seen any others of his films.
Yeah.
Have you? It just makes me think that...
I'd never seen this before. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, his list just makes me think that like he's only known about because he got to make a film about one of the most famous books of all time. Could be a harsh take.
That's probably the case. I guess the last thing I wanted to talk about as well, yeah, it is. The last thing I want to talk about was like there's a scene where they get real sugar and real and proper white bread, they call it, and that is. That they're celebrating over that is really white bread is disgusting.
What?
I hate white bread.
You love bread, but you hate white bread. That's so discriminatory.
I mean, I like.
Maybe you just hate white bread for what it represents, like the
free bread,
the purification like of bread to such an extent.
Yeah, the bleaching.
You know, like, have you ever had like the Japanese white bread when it's like
There's
really
no bread
sweet?
left in it. It's
Have you
just a
had it?
bread shape.
Like the really fluffy Japanese white bread?
Yeah, I have,
Oh
but
man,
yeah.
doesn't get any
It's
better.
good for a little bit. For a little
Yeah.
bit.
Good, but slightly
Just,
sickening.
yeah, the East Asian bakery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you said everything you wanted to say?
Right.
I
Should
think
we
I'm.
wrap it up? Sorry
Yeah.
to make it
No, man, it's all
so.
good.
Yes, not good. I'm not going to watch this film again.
Yeah, not good. Near the bottom. Sorry, 1984, but great book. So it's got that going for it. Honestly, of all the films we've watched, this will be the last one that I'd
Yeah,
watch again.
it's all right. It's a. Yeah. Also, like, people already know what the film's about. Why they make a film about it, but everyone knows if they haven't read the book, it's through cultural osmosis. Everyone has a friend or
Cultural
someone they've met who is
osmosis,
just
yeah.
like, yeah, that book changed my life or my mind or
Yeah. I think
whatever. Like, you'll be fine.
the book
You
accomplishes its
everyone
goal.
learns about it.
The book
We'll never
accomplishes
get
its
over it.
Orwell's goal really well by teaching the reader it makes you more aware of these sorts of like systems of control and influence. And it gives you a bit like a better critical ability to evaluate like, oh, why is this government official putting out this message, you know, like what is the real motive?
Yeah, exactly. But like again, like with any book, you could be like Obama and read, Marcuse or Marx or Foucault and then get into that chair at the Oval Office and say, let's do some drone strikes. So you could just read it because you think reading is fun. You don't give a shit.
Obama's just probably like a flex reader. Like, yeah, I'm clued up on philosophy, but I'm gonna fuck you up anyway because I can.
People out there, like, yeah, there's lots of people out there like that, I think.
Cool, man.
Maybe in some weird way he thought he was accomplishing some sort of revolution with with all that. But yeah, all right. Before I go, Tenet, oh, is that what we're doing, or is
I'm happy to.
Yep.
I'm just going to talk some
You've got
shit
some
about
strong
Nolan.
opinions. I liked it. It seems like you didn't really like it,
No,
so.
I haven't finished it.
Okay,
No, I like
good,
it. I
good.
just don't like
Okay,
Nolan. I
if.
just want to talk some shit on like him, even though I love Memento. Just his style.
Yeah, Memento is cool.
He has a heavy-handed
Lots of those
style.
films are cool. Shutter Island is cool. Inception was cool. Yeah,
They
it is
they're
heavy-handed.
great films.
Yeah, the Batman trilogy that he did, that was cool.
Yeah, did he do all of them though? I thought he only did Dark
Yeah,
Knight.
but yes. Yeah, all right. In that case, I think so.
Right.
No, he did Dark Knight and Dark Knight. But I know that he definitely did the Joker one and the Bane one, but I don't know about the final one.
Fair. All right,
But
dude.
yeah. In that case, we've got some good battle lines drawn as well.
Yeah. All right.
Right, peace out.
See you,
Take care,
man.
man. I miss you.
You too.